Bitcoin is thriving as the U.S. government continues to manipulate the dollar. Welcome back to the Bitcoin Layer. In today's episode, I'm going to talk about what is going on with the U.S. dollar. We'll talk about treasury yields. Are they heading higher or lower and why? We'll talk about the U.S. fiscal picture, record high interest expense. We'll talk about crude oil. Is crude oil driving the dollar higher? What's going on with gold? Are we in a global monetary reset? And of course, we will talk about Bitcoin, Bitcoin returns, and why specifically Bitcoin is thriving in this type of environment. We'll also talk about the downside risks to Bitcoin in this type of environment. We'll also discuss the downside risks to Bitcoin. Now let's start with a basic chart of US Treasury yields. I was asked recently, what is your base case scenario for yields? Are they heading higher or lower, point blank? I even put out a poll to Twitter a couple weeks ago, will 10s end the year higher or lower than 4.5%? And you guys absolutely split the middle 50-50. And I think that is a great representation of where we are right now in the market. So let's talk about the US Treasury 10-year yield. The Bitcoin Layer is proud to be sponsored by River. Make sure you check them out at river.com/TBL for a special offer of up to $100 of Bitcoin for free when you purchase. Now, River is our Bitcoin exchange of choice. They are Bitcoin only. They do not custody your Bitcoin at a third-party platform, and they encourage you to get your Bitcoin off of their exchange into self-custody. Go check them out today at river.com/TBL. Now in this chart, I have the last 5 years of price action here in 10-year yields. And what you can see is that it is a steady march higher. Now, the time value of money represents this idea that if we're going to lock our money up for a long period of time, the yield that we should be getting should compensate us for inflation. And that time value of money concept is present here on this chart. What you see in a higher inflation regime, demand for yield is much higher from investors than it was 5 years ago. Why? The cost of living is higher. The price level is continuing to increase at somewhere in the 3 to 5% range on the official basis. And we know from our pockets a much higher level of inflation when you just go about your daily business. So right now with treasury yields at 4.5% and heading to potentially 5%, the question posed, are treasury yields heading higher or lower? Stripping everything away in the 10-year part of the curve, the path of least resistance for treasury yields is higher. Now we're gonna break that down for you and why. We'll also present why we think treasury yields could head lower. Understand from our base case scenario, the 10-year, 30-year part of the curve, the path of least resistance is higher. Why is the path of least resistance higher in yields? It's two reasons. Number one, persistent or sticky inflation. The time value of money concept, remember, we want to be able to get a yield that compensates us for inflation over the next 10 years in this instrument. So if inflation, we know that it might be in the 4 to 5% range, are we going to accept a treasury yield of 4%? No, we're going to demand 5%. And at the core, that is why yields have been heading higher over the last few years and why we cannot expect a move lower in yields, materially lower in yields, until we solve this inflation problem. And we will discuss today why we are not necessarily close to solving that inflation problem. Now, we're going to spend a lot of time today talking about the dollar. Before we do that, I want to show you the relationship between treasury yields and the dollar. Now, be careful of thinking that one thing is causing the next, meaning be careful of thinking that higher treasury yields cause a stronger dollar. We can think of higher treasury yields being more attractive and bringing capital out of other currencies into the dollar and thus strengthening the dollar. But be careful of making that one-to-one causation assumption when we're thinking about these two things. So looking at the treasury yield marching higher, on the bottom pane, we have a 100-day rolling correlation of the dollar and treasury yields. What we see here is over the last few years, a very persistently high correlation. It means that as yields go higher, the dollar goes higher. Again, what we can think about is the pull of higher yields pulling capital into the dollar and strengthening the dollar. But we can also think of it from another standpoint. We can think of it as the stronger dollar actually putting debt overseas in jeopardy. Now, let me break that down for you guys. On the one hand, we think about higher yields pulling capital into the dollar and strengthening the dollar. On the other side, a stronger dollar puts a debt load in a country in Asia, for example, in a worse position. So if the country, let's call it in Indonesia, has a dollar debt, that dollar debt, when the dollar strengthens, becomes more difficult to repay. That Indonesian borrower in dollar debt might have US treasuries in reserve. So then that company sells treasuries in order to pay back its higher debt service as the dollar goes higher. What does selling the treasuries do? It sends treasury yields higher because remember, as yields go higher, price goes lower. So if the price is going lower as Indonesian dollar borrowers are selling US treasuries, the yield goes higher after the US dollar has gone higher. That is why we cannot think about causation. We instead think about correlation. The two head higher together. So let's move to the next chart. Now here I commit the sin right away in that in the title of the chart I say higher yields pull the dollar higher, but remember that it's not necessarily the causation. So what we have here is that over the last few years, treasury yields have headed higher, the dollar is headed higher, but we note here that in late 2022, the dollar reached almost 115 on this index, and that ever since then, the dollar has stabilized. Now that is where we come in with the word manipulation. The title of this video is that the US government is manipulating the US currency. Manipulating the dollar how? Suppressing the value of the dollar. Adding more liquidity to the system so as to make dollars more plentiful. What happens when dollars are more plentiful? Higher supply of dollars reduces the price of dollars. So scarcity of dollars then would put the price of dollars higher. So if the government and or the Fed introduces more dollars to the system, it weakens the dollar, and a weakening of the dollar is the US main policy right now. So we're going to talk about this a little bit more with some more charts, but keep that in the back of your mind. That what does the government want? What does the Fed want? Together, they want a weaker dollar, or they definitely do not want the dollar to get too much stronger. As the dollar gets stronger, it puts a tight financial condition on the world. It also does something very important to the US debt stock. As the dollar becomes stronger, what it does to the debt stock is it puts the, like we said for that Indonesian borrower, it puts treasuries in a tougher spot. It potentially drives treasury yields higher as overseas buyers of treasury debt might have to liquidate that debt to pay back dollar debt as it becomes more expensive. So the dollar getting stronger is dangerous for higher treasury yields. Are higher treasury yields a good thing or a bad thing for the US government? They're obviously a bad thing because higher treasury yields means more expensive debt servicing. So we have to think about the US government as wanting a weak dollar. That should be the narrative that drives the understanding of the rest of these charts. Now in this next chart, let's take a look at just the dollar by itself, the dollar index here. I've tried to keep the colors consistent throughout these charts to give you more consistency here. Every time you see the dollar index, it'll be in green. So in the treasury yield, 10-year treasury yield we had in purple. So now what you see is over the last several decades, a picture of the dollar. The first huge drawdown at the beginning of this chart in the mid-1980s, that is the Plaza Accord. That is the US going to Japan and Germany asking them to strengthen their currencies so the dollar becomes weaker. That is a stimulus to global economic activity with a cheaper dollar here. Then you see another round of dollar weakening after the 2001 recession. What happened around then? China entered the WTO, and we see the dollar moving weaker in this global deflationary wave. Now what we have is a dollar that has headed stronger really for the last 15 years. This is a global dollar squeeze. Now, this is something that the Treasury Department wants to fight. So how are they going to fight the stronger dollar? We're going to discuss that. Before we discuss how they're going to fight a stronger dollar, let's think about maybe one of the reasons that the dollar has stayed persistently strong. In black here, I've introduced crude net exports in the United States. Now, the United States, we've talked about it before, is becoming an energy powerhouse, a crude oil exporter on net, and an enormous producer, basically the world's leading producer of crude oil. And this is something that is a huge change and transition from where we were 2 to 3 decades ago. The shale revolution in the United States has caused a dollar boom. Now, where is the shale revolution going looking forward? We will definitely do our best to cover that here at TBL. Make sure to subscribe to our free publication at thebitcoinlayer.com/subscribe, and we'll also be covering it with energy experts. Now, on this chart, we have crude exports in black going up and now at about 2 million barrels on a net export basis here. But the important thing to note is that the dollar has strengthened alongside, and we really see that the move higher in the dollar starting in around 2008-2010 has lined up nicely with this move higher in crude exports. So why do I put this chart up here? Just to think about what are the drivers of currencies around the world. Trade is a driver of currency. Now, if we have the US importing a bunch of oil from overseas, like we had over the past several decades, what does that do to the dollar? We have to buy crude and sell dollars to buy that crude. That weakens the dollar. But what if we don't have to sell dollars to buy crude and we're just producing the crude here? It reduces one of the net sellers of dollars. It reduces that impulse from the market. And so is a crude production boom in the United States potentially one of the drivers of a strong dollar? I would argue yes. Now, this is a very interesting chart here, and it was inspired by a recent interview given by Luke Groman, in which he correlates the dollar and the weakening of the dollar with the Treasury General account. Now, I struck my own chart here to line up the dollar with the TGA and get a sense of, is the Treasury trying to manipulate the dollar with the way that it spends money in and out of its checking account? Meaning, does it run up the dollar and then run down the dollar balance that it has at the Fed with tax revenues and expenses, partly motivated by driving the price of the dollar? Now, it's a leap, and I looked at the chart, and there is a nice correlation, or there is a tracking there, but instead what I did on this chart is I took a look at the dollar and I tried to put the bill net change, so the amount of treasury bills that's changing from month to month, and plot that against the dollar. So what do we have here? Why did I do that, first of all? Now, Luke Groman is talking about the Treasury General account being spent down, being a boost of liquidity for the market. So we'll bring back Michael Howell's liquidity theory. We've actually talked about how the Treasury General account and the reverse repo facility are these liquidity-inducing facilities at the Fed that aren't really being controlled by the Fed. One is being controlled explicitly by the Treasury, the other is being controlled by the money market, which is being influenced by the amount of Treasury bills issued. So let's continue to unpack that. I promise we're going to get into this bill chart in a second, but I want to break it down. The Treasury General Account is the Treasury's checking account at the Fed. When the Treasury General Account is spent, it means the government is spending money. When the government spends money, contractors and employees get money in their checking account. That is a net stimulus to the economy. Okay? So when the Treasury account draws down, money comes into the economy. When the Treasury account is drawing down, it also means that the Treasury is not issuing a ton of bills to replenish the account. That is why I chose to use bill change, the net change in Treasury bills, instead of the TGA, because the two are related. So I liked this data series better because it was able to show me, are bills being issued? If the answer is yes, that means that the Treasury is pulling money out of the financial sector into its own checking account. Now, Luke Groman's thesis here is that the Treasury bills building up in the Treasury General Account sucks money out of the rest of the economy, and it actually drives the dollar weaker. So let's look at the chart now and see if this is the case. What we see in the year 2020 is that the dollar is going stronger and goes suddenly stronger when the pandemic happens as money floods into the dollar in a flight for safety. The Treasury then tries to the Treasury basically goes for a bailout package and must issue bills, raising money from the market. That should then, per Groman's thesis, drive the dollar lower. So let's look at it. And what you see is that in 2020, you have a spike in Treasury bill issuance. These are these blue bars. So what we've done is we've taken a blue bar that's positive is the amount of Treasury bills going up from month to month. So a spike in Treasury bills, and then we see the green line go down over the next year. Then what we see is Treasury bills being taken out of the market. And so that is the government spending down money. Now, as the government is spending down money, that's causing the dollar to rise in value. Why is the dollar rising in value during 2021 and 2022? The premise here is that as the government spends money, this increases liquidity because we're increasing the amount of dollars in the system as the Treasury spends dollars. And remember, more dollar supply as the Treasury spends money means a weaker dollar because quantity of dollars goes up in the system. Now let's check against the chart. The dollar goes strong up until 2022. Now, are we going to get a response from the Treasury taking money out of the markets and issuing Treasury bills in order to suppress the value of the dollar? And what we see here is that in 2022, the U.S. government starts to have months where it's issuing a lot of Treasury bills. And then it goes into 2023, and we start to see a huge run of only Treasury bill issuance, not any pay down that we were seeing in 2021 and 2022. Those pay downs send money into the economy. The net issuance months suck money out of the economy, and that suppresses the dollar. Why? Because you are introducing more dollar supply. Now what we have over the last basically year and a half here is a stabilizing dollar. Now, go back to the chart that we had of Treasury yields and the dollar. We see Treasury yields higher than where the dollar could be if we lay those two charts over each other. So what you have here is the Treasury playing games on where it's issuing instruments. Is it issuing bills? Is it issuing longer term paper? And that is one of the net drivers of financial markets right now. We'll continue to unpack that as we go. Okay, let's focus on the US economy now and think about the US fiscal picture. So in this chart, we have the US debt to GDP ratio in red. So in the next few charts, I have all the ratios or percentages in red for you guys. In green, we have the total amount of US treasuries, now 34.6 trillion, rapidly approaching 35 trillion. And this number is only going one way. It's not coming down. There's no way that the US can pay down debt over any time horizon. It's in a deficit on an annual basis as far as the eye can see. So this number will continue to march higher. There won't be any even modest dips in this on an annual basis. Now, the US GDP in blue is also heading higher. It could head lower if we get a recession. That's not the base case scenario right now, but the US GDP is, of course, heading higher, especially when we think about inflation sending nominal GDP higher. Now, what we have in the red line is the debt to GDP ratio. It has somewhat stabilized over the last few years. Why is it stabilizing? Well, you have the GDP heading higher at a faster rate over the last few years since the pandemic versus the Treasury debt. And that is a huge result of inflation here. The important thing to note about that is that that can only happen after the huge spike. So look at the huge spike during the pandemic 2020. That huge spike is the government giving fiscal stimulus to its citizens and companies. And when it does that, it raises the amount of debt. And it raises the debt to GDP ratio and actually spikes it. That spike then triggers the inflation, and the triggered inflation is why that ratio can then come down a little bit, because GDP then starts rising and the debt that was printed then starts to drive the GDP higher and get the debt to GDP ratio down a little bit. Now, the ratio is starting to go back up again over the last year or so. So we're going to continue to watch this. But the huge narrative and theme to take away from this chart is that the United States government, from a policy perspective, must need inflation because of the debt stock being too high. We'll talk about the interest expense as a percentage of GDP as well, but this should be, again, once again, in the back of your mind. The debt to GDP ratio at 122% is not sustainable, and one of the ways to get this ratio down is higher inflation. So I want to bring back actually the beginning question that we had: are rates heading higher or lower? And I said that the path of least resistance on yields is higher, and the reasoning for that is persistent inflation. Well, think about the policy motives here. Is the Fed even fighting inflation that hard? I would argue no. It's not even fighting inflation that hard, because if it was, would it be biased to cutting? Would it leave the markets biased to a downward sloping money markets curve instead of an upward sloping one? We've talked about the Fed doing a slowdown of QT. If the Fed was really serious about fighting inflation, it would be selling mortgages from its balance sheet. Selling mortgages would drive yields higher in the mortgage land. And if there were higher mortgage rates, it would penalize the housing sector. That would slow down the 20% of GDP that is the housing sector. That would contribute to a disinflationary pulse. If the Fed was serious about fighting inflation more than it currently is, we would see other types of measures, meaning the Fed would threaten more rate hikes. But it just isn't. And for that reason, we cannot take the Fed's word that it is serious about the inflation fight. We believe the Fed is motivated by different things. Of course, it's motivated by inflation when inflation is at 9%. But what about with inflation at 3.5%? It hasn't really shown that it is too motivated about this inflation fight. Therefore, the path of least resistance to yields is higher. We'll present the bull case for treasuries and why yields could come down. It's the same reason that we could have caution on Bitcoin, but it just isn't our base case. So we'll discuss that. In this next chart here, I have bills as a percentage of the total treasury debt. Now, with bills at 22% of total treasury debt, we see that that is slightly below the levels where it was in the 80s and the 90s, and much higher than it was about a decade ago. Now, if the Treasury Department continues to issue bills at a very, very high rate, what does that do? Think about the earlier chart. It weakens the dollar. So a higher bill issuance clip from the Treasury Department is a manipulation of the dollar. That we can really take from the data that we're showing you in this chart, in these charts here today. So if the Treasury Department decides to issue more Treasury bills, it suppresses the value of the dollar. It also does something very, very important to the Treasury long end of the curve. If we don't get Treasury issuance in the 10-year part of the curve because we're getting bills, what does that do? It puts a scarcity on 10s and therefore boosts the price of 10s, lowering the yield. Now, what happens when we have a lower Treasury yield? We have the U.S. government in a better fiscal position. It's better able to afford its debt service. So the quantity of bills issued, especially with regard to or regarding as a percentage of treasuries issued in total, is a very, very clear signal for what the Treasury is doing to manipulate the dollar lower or weaker. So we will be watching this very, very, very closely. Okay, tax receipts as a percentage of GDP. We see tax receipts now at about $3 trillion. That is representing about 10% of GDP. And you can see the trend is down over the last several decades, but over the last decade or so, we do see tax receipts have a little bit of an increase with respect to GDP. In this next chart, we see interest payments spiking. Now we are above $1 trillion for this single line item of interest expense at the government. So think about $3 trillion of tax receipts, about one-third of it going right back to debt holders. Now, where is this as a percentage of GDP? In red, we have that percentage. It's at about 3.75%. That's up from about 2.5% over the last decade. But it is lower than where we were in the 90s when we were at about 5%. So why was interest expense such a high percentage of GDP in the 90s? Because rates were coming down from a double-digit clip in the 80s. So with interest rates at 0%, then we could take on this huge debt stock and not really increase the amount of money that we were spending on the debt. Now we have sent that amount of money up above $1 trillion. We've sent the percentage to about 4% of GDP. And this is definitely a problem and something that the government is concerned about. It is why the government is desperate to cap yields. Again, higher bills, lower coupon issuance, more treasury scarcity. More treasury scarcity, higher price of treasuries, lower treasury yield, lower treasury debt expense. So that is the motivation. They have to get treasury yields to not rise too much. Otherwise, the problems just start to become extreme. Now, we have, again, in the background, the idea that the bailout motivation from the Federal Reserve is going to be very strong. And by bailout, I mean debt monetization. Who is the Fed bailing out? The government itself. So don't think about the Fed as a truly independent organization. Think about it as doing the Treasury's bidding, especially when you get into the zone in which the Treasury Department is seeing yields get sloppy. And we've seen that again. We've seen that a few times over the past couple years. We think about Silicon Valley. What happened when Silicon Valley went bust? When Silicon Valley went bust, the Fed put in the BTFP. It was a liquidity facility to bid Treasury. So it's essentially a repo facility that allows Treasury collateral to come into the Fed. So what happens when Treasury collateral comes into the Fed? More scarcity of Treasuries, higher price, lower yield, better fiscal position for the government. So keep that in mind. The Treasury Department is terrified of yields going higher. It has the Fed to do its bidding and cap yields. And that is where Bitcoin comes back into the conversation, guys. You at home, you own Bitcoin, you're long Bitcoin. What is the reasoning for it? The reasoning for it is that the denominator, which is dollars, is a denominator that is disappearing in value because the quantity has to always, always, always increase. So now think about the dollar and the dollar manipulation. The dollar is going to oscillate because it's a trade currency. It's an investing currency. And as trade goes around the world, the dollar will go up and down. But as the dollar goes up, the government, whether it's the Fed or the Treasury together, needs to introduce an enormous amount of supply to knock the dollar back down again, because the dollar knocking back down is the only way that the U.S. government can continue to survive. And so it is basically a permanent supply of new dollars in individual waves. And those individual waves of dollar supply is what Michael Howell calls dollar liquidity. And it is what is the impulse for Bitcoin going up, going higher. It is the investor reasoning for buying Bitcoin, because the quantity of dollars is never capped and can never be capped. So you want to own property. That's why real estate has done very well over the last couple decades. It's why gold is at an all-time high. We'll talk about gold a little bit more, but you guys are here for Bitcoin. We're here for Bitcoin. Our company is called the Bitcoin Layer. We are a research firm focused on the investment cases for Bitcoin in this current global macroeconomic backdrop. And what is the backdrop? A constant, constant manipulation of the dollar. Even if we're not sending the absolute value of DXY lower, we are continually trying to knock it back down with more supply. And why does it strengthen? That is an interesting point here. Why does the dollar strengthen even when you have all this quantity of supply? Because you still have the dollar as the global reserve currency outshining the rest of fiat. And so there's this premium on owning the dollar versus the other currencies that drives the dollar stronger. The U.S. government doesn't appreciate the knock-on effects of that stronger dollar, so it must manipulate it weaker. Okay, let's look at global commodities here. We'll look at gold and look at the price performance of gold versus U.S. Treasury real yields. Now, this is real yields are inflation-adjusted yields. And as you can see over the past 10 years, as real yields went lower, which is the purple line going higher as I've inverted this index or the axis here on the left-hand side, as Treasury real yields went lower, gold went higher. Why? Because you are not getting compensated to buy Treasuries with a negative real yield. You're not getting compensated for inflation. So that negative real yield sends you into gold. But that there's been a massive divergence, and economic observers have noted that this might be due to the seizure of U.S. Treasury assets during the Russia-Ukraine war. And what you have here is gold materially diverging and going much higher, even though U.S. real yields have gone higher. What is that telling us? It tells us that the gold market is basically saying we believe inflation, CPI, is at about 6% here. Because if you look at where real yields are pointed to per the gold market, it's at about negative 2.5%. Well, with treasury yields at 4.5%, that's the gold market telling you inflation is at 6%. That 6% inflation is what we believe the market to be at. And so we are not going to buy treasury real yields at 2.25% because we don't believe that they are compensating. We don't even believe that that 2.25% level is a real compensation above and beyond what the inflation level is. So if you guys have questions, send them in. I know that this chart is a little bit complicated. We have a lot to unpack there. So let me know. Make sure to subscribe again to our free research publication at thebitcoinlayer.com/subscribe and submit your questions there as well. Now, in this next chart, I have treasury yields versus the oil-gold ratio. Now, I've put this chart up before. This is something interesting I want to think about. Gold being the new commodity currency around the world to pay for oil in the absence of treasuries being that neutral settlement tool that we used to have. And again, in this post-Russia world, what we have now is this continual effort of bilateral trade between Russia and other parts of the world, China and other parts of the world, with the energy trade and the gold trade happening without dollars or U.S. treasuries being involved. At the margin, that's something we believe is happening and something to note, and it could be an explainer of why this ratio has diverged a little bit. So what we've seen is a higher treasury yield in purple has correlated with a higher oil-to-gold ratio. Why? Historically, higher treasury yields mean more growth and inflation expectations as the U.S. and the global economy is doing well. If the global economy is doing well, there's a bid for oil. If there's a bid for oil, that means the oil to gold ratio is going to increase as there's just more economic activity. People sell the yellow metal and buy black oil in order to furnish economic activity. Then when they get scared about the economic activity slowing down, they sell oil and they buy the yellow metal and sit on the sidelines. So that's why these two numbers move together. But now they've diverged. Why? Well, think of it like this. If gold is the new currency to trade in oil, that means that gold is going to rise in its value relative to oil because it's now being used in addition to a global FX reserve. It's also being used as an energy currency. So there's a utility now value in gold. And that utility value in gold might have sent this oil to gold ratio lower, even though treasuries in yield are heading higher. Other than that, there's another explanation here is that the global economy is not doing that well, sending the oil-gold ratio lower, but yields are not coming back down as there's a flight to safety and a desire to lock in time value of money at 5%, 4%, 3%. Why? Because inflation. Inflation is persistent. Why would we lock in our money? You can see here, the oil-gold ratio suggests treasury yields should be below 3%, potentially at 2%, but they're at almost 5%. Why? Investors are not accepting a 3, 4% treasury yield locked up for 10 years. The time value of money is not being compensated. Inflation is too sticky, too persistent, and that is what we are seeing with these charts. It's very interesting here, guys. We're thinking about, are we in the middle of a grand monetary reset? The reason that you own Bitcoin is that you probably believe the answer is yes. Does that mean that the dollar won't be the denomination of currency when you go and travel and you see foreign exchange brokers across the world on the street or in international airports? No. We're not saying that it's going to be gold-denominated prices where you go or Bitcoin-denominated prices where you go, at least not in the next few years. But what we're seeing here is that the dollar is losing its value over the long term to real assets, stocks, gold, Bitcoin, and we'll show you some of those numbers as well. But I want us to think about, are we in the middle of a global monetary reset? Did it start post-COVID? Did it start post-Russia-Ukraine? Are there things that are happening right now that give us evidence that we are in the middle of this monetary reset? So we'll continue to keep that in mind. A few more charts for you here, and we're getting now into the Bitcoin portion of the video, thinking about Bitcoin's price performance relative to equities and relative to treasury bonds. Now, what I've done here is I've taken in green and red the five-year returns of gold and the stock market indexed back to 100. So $100 invested in the stock market would be worth $189 today. And 5 years ago, $100 invested in gold would be worth $183 today. Now, in purple, I have $100 invested in 10-year treasury futures would be worth $74 today. So an obliteration of capital, really a destruction of capital. So now what I've done with these top two lines, the blue and the maroon line, is I've taken the stocks and gold performance and divided them by this treasury instrument here. Sorry, I mentioned that these are 10-year treasury futures. I meant 30-year treasury futures here. So dividing the green and red lines by the performance of treasury bonds and making the bond market the denominator, what you're seeing is that the asset returns are extended way beyond what they were just on a nominal basis. And that is really what Luke Groman is saying, and I took a lot from him. And I will make this note here, guys, about Groman's thesis. Over the past few years, I've really come to respect his understanding of financial history. And I will say that a few years ago, my hesitancy to his thesis was this idea that he was labeling the treasury market as a bubble in that the price would be collapsing. But what he's really trying to represent and what I'm starting to embrace more and more, it's not a pure price collapse. It's thinking about the bond as a denominator or thinking about relative returns. And that is what is so important. That's what you see here with the blue and the maroon line. The relative performance is extended when thinking about how we compare real assets to basically the debt instrument of the US government. And so in this process, we see the value of debt being destroyed. If it's not being destroyed on price, it's being destroyed on a real basis via inflation and via the price performance of real assets, and I am including gold, including real estate, including equities, which is an ownership of property, of assets that generate future cash flow that is not linked explicitly to the dollar. Think about it. If you have a factory and you're building things, those things can be sold for dollars, but they can be increased in their price and they can be sold for Bitcoin one day. So what you own when you own equity is you own that factory, and that is property. When you own Bitcoin, you own property. And this is what I want to lead in with the next chart, Bitcoin relative performance versus stocks and gold over the last 5 years. Now you have that 89 and 83% return, still in green and red there. But now you have Bitcoin in orange, $100 5 years ago in Bitcoin worth $780 today, completely obliterating the performance of other asset classes. And that is really the driving point here, why we are focused on global macroeconomics. If it is our thesis that Bitcoin is benefiting alongside other asset classes, such as stocks, such as gold, if the dollar is being manipulated lower in a constant increase in the supply of dollars, note we didn't even talk about today the total size of the treasury market. We didn't talk about the quantity of bank loans being issued around the world. We didn't talk about any of that. We're just thinking about the government manipulating the dollar weaker with its narrow measures. And I include the Federal Reserve's balance sheet and the Fed's QE programs in that narrow measure set because private banking money is obviously a much larger source of money supply around the world. But with just looking at the manipulation of the dollar, sending assets higher, and then seeing Bitcoin's outperformance of those other assets, does it even make any sense to own anything other than Bitcoin in this regime? We would argue no. This is not investment advice. You guys need to do your own research, but we hope that our research here contributes to your investment process at home. Thanks for sticking with us today at the Bitcoin Lair. Subscribe to this channel. Subscribe to our free research publication at thebitcoinlair.com. We'll catch you guys next time. The Bitcoin Lair is proud to be sponsored by River. River is a Bitcoin-only exchange. So if you guys are looking for a place to get allocated, go check out river.com/TBL for a special offer of up to $100 of Bitcoin for free when you go sign up and purchase Bitcoin. River does not keep your Bitcoin with a third party, so avoid these court cases and third-party custodian risk with River. They have a great proprietary solution. Go check them out today, river.com/TBL.